You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome to the Well-Fed Women podcast. This is episode number 413. I am your host, Noelle Tarr of coconutsandkettlebells.com. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer, and it is a joy to have you here today. I'm going to be interviewing Jordan Lee Dooley. Many of you probably know her. She's got a flourishing and very popular Instagram where she bridges the gap between helping women pursue their dreams but also helping women prioritize their health through the process, which is can be a challenge. She's a two-time national best-selling author of Own Your Everyday, and her new book is called Embrace Your Almost. She's the host of the top-rated She podcast and founder of two companies, the Own It Academy and Soul Scripts. Her trajectory began with a small Etsy shop in college, which quickly grew into so much more. Now she has books and programs and resources. And her mission is really to help women pursue their passions. And this is really hard, while also understanding there are going to be uncertainties. You're not always going to have control. And here's how you understand and deal with those waiting seasons and those unmet expectations. It's things that we all deal with on a hourly, daily, monthly, yearly basis. Yet a lot of us never talk about this stuff. A lot of us are not intentional. Me mostly, me definitely included. We're not intentional with really making the most of these waiting periods, of these unmet expectations, of adversity. You know, adversity a lot of times brings clarity. So that's what we're really going to talk about today. I so appreciate the work that she is doing because these are hard topics. These aren't really things that you can say, oh, here's your three-step process to get through that failure you're experiencing, but it is something that all of us deal with. So I'm excited to get this conversation to you because I think it'll be really helpful, especially if you're listening to this in real time. This is during, you know, the early part of the year where we're all talking about goals and achieving and doing, and it's hard not to get wrapped up in that. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this. Let's jump to the interview. Well, welcome, Jordan. I am so thrilled to have you here and to talk about all the things that we need to hear about, which is like setting the right goals and boundaries and failure and how we manage all that stuff. Because honestly, I feel like most women deal with this, but nobody's really addressing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I know it's something I've struggled with, and I don't know that it's something you ever fully figure out, but I think if you can get some guardrails in place and some guidelines, it can be really, really helpful. So I'm looking forward to it.
So our society is focused on achieving and doing and accomplishments. And so many women, I think, live with the weight of just should and expectations on a daily basis, not just in their personal life, but also in their professional life, with their bodies, with fitness and health decisions, with like our expectations of ourselves as wives and mothers and all of those things. And truthfully, I feel like it's at the root of a lot of chronic stress and adrenal dysfunction and thyroid issues and anxiety that women feel, because we always are dealing with these thoughts and these emotions of not measuring up or feeling like we're not good enough. Mm-hmm. So how do you identify the right goals to pursue in a world that is constantly telling us what you should be doing?
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things, because there's, like you said, constantly not only pressure to achieve something somewhere in every area of your life. And I think that can create, that often comes from trying to keep up with what we see other people doing, or even maybe trying to outdo others in another area subconsciously. And I think there's also a lot of messages that tell us what we should want out of life. What, you know, there's a lot of voices out there telling us what success looks like, what matters, where we should be putting our energy, what we should be achieving, what we should be doing by X, Y, and Z age or X, Y, and Z time in our life. And, you know, it's interesting because I think all of us can get caught up in that at different seasons of our life. And I know for me personally, I really kind of unintentionally got caught up in that, especially in my early to mid 20s, as I was trying to establish my career, you know. And I think a lot of women in their 20s and 30s are, those are two decades where you're making a lot of decisions. Mm. You are deciding who you want to marry, where you want to live, what you want to do professionally, if you want to have kids, where you want to, like, all of these big decisions, who your people are, you know, what you believe, what you value. So I think as we're navigating all those things, the voices and the pressure telling us what is good or looks good or sounds good really can kind of get convoluted with what we actually value. And so one thing that I really had to learn, and it was actually through a season of a lot of loss that really kind of set me on my back and really made me kind of pause. You know, sometimes it's those jarring experiences in life that make you pause for a second and look around and really reevaluate, where am I going and why am I going there and what am I doing? And so I started to ask myself some key questions, and I really try to teach this because I think it's so simple, but so often overlooked. And so I think a really key question is, what do I want and why? And when I say, what do I want? I don't mean like, what kind of car do you want? Or, you know, do you want a beach house? Like, I don't mean these like big lofty goals. I mean, like, if you had to think about your life in 5 years, how do you want to feel? What do you want to be spending your time doing? Like, who do you want to be spending time with? You know, and I think just kind of zooming out and saying, what do I value? What do I want? And then why do I want it? And I think that's the key question, because I think we answer that question so arbitrarily, unintentionally. And there's a huge difference between arbitrary goals and aligned goals. And so many of us are setting arbitrary goals because we saw our sister lose 10 pounds, because we saw our friend buy a new house, because we saw, you know, someone online hit six figures in their business this year, or whatever it may be. And when we go, oh, well, I want to do that, we just start adding things to our plate and setting these goals that are actually pretty arbitrary, because we haven't even asked, is there a clear purpose driving that for me? Or is it just something that sounds good, might impress my friends, might sound good on the internet, whatever. So the part two to really setting clear and aligned goals that really align with what you value is asking, well, why do I want that? If you are thinking about setting a goal of, I want to lose 10 pounds, or I want to buy a house next year, or I want to grow my business, or whatever it might be, you have to come back to, well, why? And when you start asking why, you may find, like, I don't actually know. Like, I don't know. Or you might find, well, I want to do that so I can stay home with my kids full time. Or I want to do that because I want to feel better. I want to be able to run. I want to be able to play with my kids in the backyard. But if there's not a clear why, that's an arbitrary goal. So that is the key question to ask. What do I want? Why do I want it? And then you can start asking the questions like, okay, how am I going to get there? What's a realistic timeline? How do I do this in a sustainable way? But you have to start with this. What do I think I want? And then why do I want it? And you can start auditing all the goals that you think you're going to pursue this year, all the things you think you want to do. And you might find that only one or two of them are actually the ones you should be focused on.
Yeah. You touched on something really important, which is like just chronic comparison culture. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is so bad now, especially with social media, because all we do is live on our phones. Mm-hmm. So how do we, like, I'm just even thinking to myself, like, it, even though I try to proactively manage my time on social media, it gets into you when you're mm-hmm. seeing what other people are doing and achieving and accomplishing. I mean, we know social media is a highlight reel. Mm-hmm. Do you recommend, or how do you recommend that women manage their social media time? Or, I mean, it's not that it's all bad, right? I mean, you and I live on social media. It's what we do. It's how we share. It's how we connect. Yeah. But how do we engage in a thoughtful way and not let some of those things seep into our, oh, that's what I should be doing, or those should be my goals too.
Yeah. You know, it can be tough, and there's so many benefits of social media. I think it's created so many opportunities for us as women to get to work from home, to have more flexibility, to do these things that maybe we've never really in past generations been able to do. However, I think there also needs to be some bumpers on it, if you will. And something that has really helped me, I started implementing this practice a few years ago, and admittedly, like, I'm not 100% perfect about it. I don't do it every single week, but I try to be as consistent about it as I can, especially if I'm not in like a sprint season where I'm like launching something, right? So when it comes to social media, something that my husband and I tried to implement, we actually started this in 2019, was one day completely unavailable, meaning we weren't looking at email. We weren't looking at social media. We honestly weren't. We actually got a house phone one, like, the first year, so that our families could call us, like, if there was an emergency. I'm like, are we 90 years old? I don't know. But we implemented that so that we could truly shut our phones off and put them in a drawer. And we would do that for 24 hours. So the way that we would often do that, and this can be done in any way, and maybe it's something that you start for 4 hours on a Sunday afternoon. Like, I don't necessarily think you have to jump in at 24 hours, but getting into this rhythmic pause where you rhythmically and regularly say enough, right? And you set it aside and there's no influence from the outside world. There's no pressure to show up and share and create and do, even if you work full-time on the internet, because nobody needs to hear from you 24/7. There's voices everywhere. They're not going to miss you for a day. Like, no offense, but they're not. And getting into that routine can really be helpful. And if you start with 4 hours, do that 4 hours every Sunday for a few weeks, and then up it to 8 hours, up it to 12 hours, eventually try to work up to 24 hours. And if you want to just go all in, do the 24 hour thing, great. But we would turn off our phones Saturday evenings. This is commonly what we try to do. Sometimes it's Friday evenings to Saturday evenings, but a lot of times it's around dinner time. Phones go away, or at least, you know, social media kind of all gets shut down. And the only thing it's available for is like a family or a friend texts us. But shut it down. And then that stays that way through the following evening after dinner. So there's a full 24 hour period where, granted, a handful of those hours you're sleeping, but you get a full day to kind of like lean into rest and lean into your real life and lean into meaningful conversations, check in with your partner, your family, you know, have an intentional meal where there's no distraction and where you're really, I mean, we try to do no technology in those times as much as possible. So there's been times where like, we'll go for a long walk, we'll read books. The first time we did this, I remember I had been so chronically like on the social media hamster wheel and just working and achieving and pursuing goals nonstop that year, that the first time we did this, we started it on a Saturday evening, and by Sunday afternoon, I didn't want to turn my phone back on. And I remember I actually cried, and I just was like, why am I crying? But it was like, my soul was like exhaling for the first time, because when you're just not plugged in and there's no dings, there's no notification, there's no anything, it's like you kind of get back to how you're meant to live. And I think if we can get into this habit of rhythmically doing that, even if we are getting, you know, voices and influence throughout the week, if you have this hard reset, it helps you kind of really reflect and reevaluate before you just jump into, oh, I got to be doing that. You know, you might see something, it might influence you a bit, but if you take your rhythmic pause, that can be the time where you kind of really reconsider, like, okay, I saw this thing on Wednesday. What do I really think about that? How am I feeling? Let me talk to my husband about it. Let me talk to my friend about it. Let me process this. Let me journal about it. You know, let me think about it while I walk. So anyway, that's kind of a practice that can be really, really helpful to implement in a world where we're constantly plugged in.
I love that. I think that's fantastic. And it really does give, like you said, your system an opportunity to reset, because I feel like in today's day and age, we are all overstimulated constantly. Mm-hmm. And we don't really realize it until we actually take the break.
And that's why I'm like, why am I crying? I think it was what my body was like, because I needed a break. You know, we are so overstimulated. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Love that. So you talk a lot about priorities, and I feel like this goes hand in hand with goals, because oftentimes when we're trying to make goals for ourselves, again, we're thinking about, well, what do I want and why? Mm-hmm. And that shapes our priorities and what we're spending our time on. So this might be a crazy question, but how do you know what your priorities are and what actually is the priority? Because I feel like if everything is the priority, then nothing really is. Mm-hmm. So how do we narrow down what those priorities are and we know what to kind of prioritize but elevate over the others?
Yeah, it can be tough. And I think it's interesting. I don't know if you've read the book Essentialism, but in that book, he talks about how it wasn't until not very long ago, probably a few hundred years ago, that we tried to take the word priority, which meant the main thing, the primary thing, and we tried to turn it into a plural, meaning that everything's the primary thing, or multiple things can be the primary thing. And then really, in reality, like you said, nothing is. So I kind of was thinking about that as I read that and learned that. And I was like, well, how do you do this though? Because there's various things in your life that are important, your family, your home, your work, you know, like, how do you just pick which one gets the focus, right? So as I was kind of working through, how do I prioritize instead of just trying to balance perfectly all the things that are important to me, this idea of a present priority came to mind. And it was kind of in tandem with this idea of like asking why to every goal. And what I mean by a present priority is really looking at picking a window of time. So for example, let's say you've decided that this year your big goal, or you know, a big goal you have is X, and you've decided the reason why is, you know, whatever you've decided. Once you're kind of clear on that, I think you can then kind of reverse engineer and say, okay, well, what does that mean for what I need to prioritize in this season? So for example, I'll give you a real life example. So when my husband and I were setting some business goals, it was during a season of a lot of loss. And I was expressing to him that I wanted to slow down work-wise, or at least get him reduce stress and make some different lifestyle choices. Yet I'm over here setting like these massive professional goals. He's like, okay.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I was sharing this big professional goal I had, he goes, okay, awesome. Why do you want to do that? And at first I was like, I don't know, it sounds good. You know, the same problem we were talking through earlier. But then as we kind of dug into it, it was like, well, I think I want to do that because I'd like to hire an additional team member to kind of get some more things off my plate. Like there was a deeper reason, but we really had to dig into it. So once we did that, we were able to actually figure out what we really needed to do that. And in my brain, I was like, to hire an additional team member, I need to make $1 million extra this year. And in reality, it was not anywhere near that. So it helped me set a more realistic and achievable goal. So that was kind of a big picture, like here's where we're going. So then in that season, once I was kind of like clear on what I'm trying to prioritize, which was my health, honestly, I was trying to work on healing. Then everything else, just all my business decisions, all my home decisions, like we ended up selling our house to simplify. I hired extra help. We simplified on some projects. So when you kind of get clear on what is my present priority? And in that season for me, it's like for the next 6 months, I need to focus on my health. I'm uncovering some health issues. I've gone through some loss. Like I need to figure out what's going on. So it's not that work suddenly becomes less important. It's not that I just stop taking care of my home or I'm no longer married or any of these other priorities in air quotes go away. It's that they fall in line with the thing that needs to take the front seat right now. So it starts to be more of a, I'm making decisions in these other areas in a way that supports the present priority and allows me to steward those areas better rather than just stretching myself so thin. So for example, if your present priority, if you know you want to buy a house next year and that's a clear goal you and your family have, then maybe your present priority is paying off credit card debt. Okay, great. Well, so then the decisions you make professionally are probably going to be influenced by that. What you do socially will probably be influenced by that. Like just the way you steward those other priorities or responsibilities is maybe a better word, should be adjusted to fall in line with that present priority. And it's seasonal. That's why I say present. You know, for 6 months, the present priority might be paying off credit card debt or, you know, healing your adrenals or, you know, whatever it might be, paying off student loans. I don't know. But getting clear on what needs to take precedent, what is the most pressing thing that needs tending to right now? And then how do I just adjust my other responsibilities to fall in line with and support that rather than take away from it, allows everything to really work harmoniously together and helps everything kind of have a clear aim.
I love that. That is such a good like life hack, so to speak, because I mean, the fact that you sold your house and did these huge things, most people wouldn't do that, right?
And I'm not suggesting everyone needs to move to support their present priority. And the reason we chose to do that is because we lived on a lot of land. It was a fixer-upper. It was like a money pit and a huge stressor. So we identified, okay, if I'm trying to prioritize my health, what are the things that are huge stressors and what do we need to change? So for us, we made a massive decision. But for you, it might just be, okay, maybe we're not going to remodel a kitchen this year. You know, it could just be a slight change in your direction of the things you wanted to do. It just, it's,
I mean, I love that. Honestly, I love that because I feel like you were so dedicated to this is what I need to do for my health that you were like, nothing gets in the way, not even like the house we live in. Whereas most people would just say, well, it's the thing we got to do. Like we're here. It's just too much. I'm not going to do that. And then you stay sick or that priority becomes, oh, well, I've got to prioritize my health, but I'm not getting better, you know? And so I feel like once you really can say, no, nothing else can be compromised. And, you know, I've dealt with chronic pain and stuff like that at different areas of my life. And I feel like once I started saying, this year I want to remain like injury free. This year I want to be like manage my pain better and have less days in pain. Then my whole life, like everything around my life changed. How I worked out, how I fed myself, how I moved, the things that I did, like once that became my goal on my, you know, January goal list, as opposed to, I want to run a marathon this year or whatever, you know, like it always was something like I thought that I should. And once you kind of, I like that priority of like, I want to get better or I want to remain injury free, because then you can, like you said, everything around your life can be set up to support that.
Yeah. And it's a practical approach because it's not realistic to say I'm picking my one priority and abandoning all the other things. It's saying, I'm going to pick the thing that's going to get the focus and make sure everything else, the way that I do those things and take care of those things, supports that rather than takes away from it. That's what it boils down to. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. And then you reevaluate. Maybe 6 months pass and you go, okay, you know what? The present priority needs to shift because now I got a sick kid, or now I got, you know, a goal professionally I need to focus on, or you're constantly reevaluating. But I think taking it in these short increments of like the next 3 months, what needs to be the present priority, or the next year, what needs to be the present priority? Because I think the idea of picking one priority for always and forever sounds really overwhelming. And that's not practical or realistic. So what we do is we go, well, everything's a priority then. My kids are a priority. My house is a priority. My work is a priority. And it's like, pause. What's the priority? What's the thing? If you almost thought of your life as a garden, and I think this is really helpful. And you thought it's your health and your family and all the facets of your life as a garden, look around and go, what's wilting? and what needs TLC ASAP. Maybe a couple things, but what needs the most urgent care? That's going to emerge as the present priority. What has the most urgency? And then how do I tend to the rest of my garden well in such a way that it's going to contribute to the flourishing of that thing that needs help versus taking away from it? That's really the way to think about it.
Love that. What weeds need to be pulled?
Yeah. Yeah. And also what needs to be removed, right? Yeah. Are there things choking out the growth of really key priorities and things in my life that need to be tended to? Absolutely.
Yes. If you're looking for an easy way to supplement with minerals, I have a free 8-pack of electrolytes for you to grab. So listen up. One of my favorite ways to replace minerals is with Element. I started supplementing with Element after workouts, and it made a huge difference in my energy and the dizziness I used to experience post-workout. Now I use it just about every day. Whether I'm feeling a bit groggy or tired, and especially when I'm sick and fighting a cold, I drink Element. Element makes grab-and-go electrolyte replacement packs. Electrolytes are minerals in your blood and other body fluids that carry an electric charge. Your cells use electrolytes to do a plethora of things, including creating energy, helping muscles contract, and balancing fluid inside and outside of cells. This is why hydrating with just water is largely inefficient, because your body needs electrolytes for that water to be properly absorbed into cells. Stress and sickness deplete minerals and electrolytes, and you lose them when you sweat and go to the bathroom, so supplementation is key. Deficiencies show up as dizziness, muscle cramps, headaches, fatigue, and sleep disturbances. Element has no sugar, gluten fillers, or artificial ingredients. You just tear open a pack, pour, and stir it with water. It's also great for kids. My kids love it, and they sip on it when they're sick, like right now. Right now, everyone, including new and current customers, can get a free 8-pack of Element with any order. Element comes in boxes of 30. There is free shipping on all orders. And now all orders will get a free 8-pack, which has all the flavors of Element. To get it, go to drinklmnt.com/wellfed and make sure to use the code wellfed to get your free sample 8-pack. Again, that's drinklmnt.com/wellfed. Okay, so I assume that you have a little bit of experience with probably perfectionism and wanting things to be right. And I know you've produced a lot. You've grown an amazing business. How do you spot perfectionism, and how do you get yourself out of sort of like a perfectionist spiral where it stops you from making decisions and because it's not perfect yet, or it's not the way you envisioned it in your head?
Yeah. You know, I think it's been interesting because there's different seasons in my life where that's been worse than other times. And it's interesting because I think honestly, through failure, embarrassment, and suffering, I hate to say it, because as perfectionists, as people who want to do things well, we want to avoid those things like the plague. We want it to work out on the first try. We don't want to embarrass ourselves. We don't want to mess it up. But I actually think the path forward through overcoming this like perfectionism, imposter syndrome, fear of failure, all that kind of all comes together. I actually think the way is through, not around the thing that we're trying to avoid. Like, it's through putting something out there that isn't ideal. It's through, failing in an area. It's through embarrassment. Like, I always tell this story of when I first started speaking, and I was terrified to speak because I didn't want to embarrass myself. I didn't want to mess up. Yet it was something I knew I felt like I was supposed to be doing. I had a message to share. And one of my very first speaking events, I have no idea how I ended up at this event. It was like 1,000+ people. There was a pretty well-known band that was the like music for the night. And I was the keynote speaker. And I was like, what am I doing here? But I gave like my main talk, and then the band was going to come out, and then I was supposed to come give like a 5-minute closing. So I got through the main talk just fine. Everything was great. The band comes out. They happen to have really long songs. It's called Bethel Music, if anyone's familiar with that band. But
oh, very nice.
They have like 14-minute songs half the time. So an hour passed. I thought, oh, surely they're through their set. This must be their last song. So I go back to the side of the stage. I'm ready to go walk out and give my wrap-up message.
Oh, no.
The drummer, and the drummer's nodding his head and kind of looking at me off to the side. And I forgot drummers just nod their head. Like, that's a thing they do. So I thought that was my cue because the music was slowing. So I walk myself out there, just start talking. The main singer, they're starting their last song, but she's looking at me like, what are you doing? I'm looking at her like, I thought you were done. The sound guy shuts my mic off. I'm looking out. Everyone's got their like hands over their mouth, like embarrassed for me. And so anyway, it was like, I wanted to crawl into a hole, like worst experience of my life, right? My greatest fear had come through. That's the point of that story. Yes. And I didn't really know what to do. I just kind of froze. And then I just like curtsied and walked off stage and wanted to crawl into a hole and like stay there for the rest of my life. And I realized in 5 minutes, I still have to go back out there and address everyone.
Oh my gosh, Jordan.
So it was, you know, one of those moments where I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly why I never wanted to speak. I never should have done this, you know, questioning everything. Managed to get through it kind of, I don't even remember. It was years ago, but I remember after the event, this little girl, she was probably 15, 14 years old. She was there with her mom. She came up to me and she was like, hey, thank you for being awkward.
Oh,
it's like, that is the weirdest compliment I've ever gotten. Okay. But she was like, thank you for being awkward. You know, it helps me. It makes you seem more human, like when you're up on stage or whatever. And it struck me like, you know, I think we're so afraid of messing up or embarrassment, but like, that's often the thing that connects us with people. And actually what was so interesting to me was after that event, my fear of speaking, my fear of embarrassing myself, like kind of diminished because I was like, well, I got through it and I survived and I'm still here and no one else is thinking about it as much as I am. Like, so I think sometimes like the thing that we're afraid of doing and why we're so afraid to like put the work out there or try the event or put ourselves outside of our comfort zone is because we don't want to mess it up. But I actually think the way past that fear is by getting through your first mess up or two, by getting through someone's negative opinion or feedback and like realizing it's not the end of the world. I'm still alive. Like I'm still okay. Yeah. There's work to do. Okay. You know, but you have to almost just like do it afraid in some ways, because that like, once you experience the thing you're so afraid of experiencing, you'll realize like, oh, okay, like moving on. And now it's like, okay, if I mess up, like I'm a human, you know, it makes you more human. So that's just a fun story I tell because I think it can be easy to get stuck in your own fears and then it holds you back. And it's like, man, like I have no idea how much of an impact that might have had on that girl who may want to speak one day, you know, or whatever. So your failures and your mistakes connect you with people and they have just as much of an impact as the successes that you have. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
Yes, I love that. I love that. And if anything, it's an amazing story to tell. You've got like the ultimate party.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for being awkward. You're welcome. Yeah,
thank you for being awkward. That was the cherry on top. Okay, so failure is really hard and nobody likes it. And I do feel like failure is often a part of success. Like you said, for example, I feel like a lot of people, there's a book that I think Angela Duckworth wrote called Grit. And it's essentially about you've got to be able to push through the times of failure because that's right before the times of success. So if you don't have the grit to push through that failure, then you're not going to actually see those successes.
Yeah.
But a lot of times failure is also a sign that we shouldn't be doing something or it's not working. So how do we know when we should be pushing through failure or if we should take that as a sign that we should pivot and be doing something else?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I wish there was like a, here's your three-step way to know that. But and while there's not necessarily that, because it really can vary person to person, situation to situation, and all of those details, I think there are a few things we can do to kind of evaluate, like, am I trying to force something here, you know, or am I giving up too soon? I think that's really the question. Like, do I give up? And is that giving up too soon? Or is there, am I at the point where I'm actually trying to force something that maybe isn't meant for me? Couple things. One, I think if you run into a roadblock, or one or two roadblocks, I think that's pretty typical of an experience. It's not uncommon to come up against some resistance when you're walking in your calling. I truly believe that. So I think if you're facing a little bit of resistance, that's one thing. But if you're like, I have been at this and I have taken this from 7,000 different angles, and I'm at the point where my hands are so tightly gripped around this that I am trying to force it to work out no matter what it takes, no matter how I have to do it. And I think you have to really evaluate, are my hands closed and clenched around my plan, my timeline, my expectation? Or am I trying to pursue this, but yet with open hands, knowing, okay, maybe it won't go quite how I thought, or maybe it won't be in the order that I thought, or the timeline will look a little different than I thought, but I'm still going to move forward because I know this is a priority to me, right? So for example, like I think, well, I could give you a million examples, but I think if you are unsure of that, then the next thing you have to consider is how do I get really wise counsel on this? Because one thing that can be really hard when you're trying to make those decisions and when you're trying to evaluate that is when you're so close to something, it can be hard to have clarity on like, well, what's my posture in this? Am I trying to grip my plan so tight that I'm unwilling to see other paths forward or alternative routes or whatever else might be available for me that I'm missing? Or, you know, am I doing this open-handedly? So I think the second step to really evaluating what's the right next thing is to seek wise counsel from trusted mentors, friend, people who know you and know your goals, know your story, know your heart, but can also look at it a little bit more objectively and not quite so emotionally. So this might be a spouse, this might be a mentor, this might be a pastor, this might be a parent, a friend, it might be a couple of those different people. And one thing I like to do is, especially if I'm trying to decide, like, do I keep moving on this? You know, do I keep pushing forward? Maybe do I take a break? Do I stop altogether? You know, I try to consult a handful of people. Like, I think if you just consult one person, it can be helpful, but I think it's really helpful if you consult 2, 3, or 4, because then you're going to be able to kind of take the average of those inputs that they give you. And that can be helpful to really go, okay, 3 out of the 4 people I talked to have said, like, I really think you're forcing this. Maybe it's time to just lay it down for a bit, not quit altogether, but maybe like shift your focus for a bit and give yourself a break. And maybe that'll help you get clarity on the next right move forward, you know, or maybe it's the other way. Maybe they tell you different advice, but I think sometimes our generation forgets the value of seeking counsel because we can go to Pinterest and Google for everything in so many ways. And we forget, like, there are people in our life who can help see things from a 30,000 foot view that maybe we can't see. So those are my best 2 pieces of advice: is evaluate, am I tight, like white knuckle gripping this, or am I pursuing it as intentionally and, you know, as intentionally and well as I can, but with open hands to what the specific outcome or timeline, et cetera, might be. And if you're not entirely sure what that answer is, or you can't quite come to clarity on that, I think step 2 is really seek some wise counsel and ask if they can help you evaluate that and really kind of make a path forward.
Yeah, I love that. You're so right, because I do feel like this generation Googles everything, rightly so. Everything is on the internet.
Right.
And so, it can be a really great thing, because when our doctor tells us you're fine, nothing's wrong, we Google our symptoms and we're like, oh, it's adrenal dysfunction. Yeah. Like, that's helpful. Right. But
there's some things Google can't guide you on.
And there's also some things that are not correct answers for you that Google will tell you. So getting the wise counsel and really using your network and using other people who are maybe steps ahead of you, I think is so valuable.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So many women, myself included, live in their heads thinking and mulling over decisions constantly. So how do you recommend getting out of your head and getting clarity when you have big questions or big decisions that you want to make? And even like, if you don't know your life's purpose, I feel like a lot of women struggle with that, because we're talking about like, oh, you know, let's talk about how you mull through these times of, you know, where you're in betweens. And some people are like, I'm not even there yet. I haven't even started. I don't even know what my calling is. So when you have these big decisions and you need clarity, or you're trying to find, you know, your purpose, how do you recommend moving forward in that way?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing, and I think this is really, really important for women to hear, I think we have a lot of pressure put on us to like figure out what you're to do with your life, figure out your life's purpose. And it's like, here's the reality. Life comes in seasons and life comes in phases. So what you might be doing in your 20s and what you feel called to in your early 20s before you become a mom or before you have more responsibilities is going to probably look completely different than where you feel led in your mid to late 30s. I actually really have found, and this is just through relationships, I work with women all the time. I literally create content for women. But I also have my own experiences, tons of relationships with women. And I find that every like 5 to 7 years, women often feel the need to make a shift. And I think, especially in the like 20s, 30s, and even into 40s. And I think that's because, well, one, we live in a world that tells us like, pick your one path and that's what you do, right? I think the world is different now. I think maybe that worked 30, 40 years ago. But I think nowadays, because there's different opportunities and because our life is constantly shifting, what happened five years ago, probably somebody wasn't even married. Now they might be married with 2 kids. You know, like a lot can happen in 5 to 7 years. So the thing you're feeling pulled to or called to, or what you prioritize, when that shifts, your purpose might shift, or what you're feeling like your purpose is in this time will probably shift, where you need to invest your energy, all of that. So I think this pressure of like figuring out your life's purpose is unnecessary, because there's probably more than one thing that you're going to be called to do. So understand that if what your calling is right now looks different than it did 5 years ago, or looks different than it will in 5 years, that's okay. That's normal. So just don't call yourself indecisive and like kick yourself, because I think that's just a normal female experience and human experience. The second thing is, if you are in a time where you're like, I'm trying to figure out what kind of impact I can have, trying to figure out if, you know, what I want to do when it comes to work or my vocation, even if it's not necessarily like a business, or a career, maybe it's going back to school, maybe it's taking care of kids, like whatever your vocation or your calling may be in this season. I think in order to get clear on that, you have to really evaluate 2 key things. You have to consider, what skills do I have, or what skills can I acquire right now? But I think looking at the ones you already have, the knowledge you have, the experiences you have, the skills you have. And a lot of women will say, well, I don't have any. I've been taking care of kids. It's like, do you know how many skills come with that? So first of all, you know, like you don't have to have worked in corporate America to have skills. So I think first evaluating your actual skills and your knowledge is part one. Then part two is, I don't like the word passion because I think a lot of people confuse passion with interests. So to really break this down, passion is what you feel personally connected to because of a challenge, pain point, suffering, you know, et cetera, in your life that you personally connect with. I guarantee you, as you host this podcast, like you said, you've struggled with chronic pain, you've had health issues. Now you turn around and want to help women through those, correct? Like that is right. Part of, I think, what differentiates a passion from an interest, because the world is constantly saying, follow your passions. And it's like, well, I like knitting. Is that a passion or is that just a hobby and an interest? So to differentiate, what do I like doing just for fun, for leisure, for enjoyment versus what's something I connect with? I have a passion for mentoring women. I have a passion for helping women learn how to cook because I grew up doing that with my grandmother. Or I have a passion for helping women with their health because I've had to walk through my own mountains and valleys with that. Or whatever it may be, I have a passion for helping women earn an income from home because once I learned how to do that, I, you know, stayed home with my kids. The point is, like, if you're trying to evaluate this, you have to figure out where your skills and your true passion, not just your interests, combine. And usually you're going to find your passion is at the place of your pain points. And it doesn't have to be the world's deepest pain. It doesn't have to be tragedy. But what's a challenge you have overcome in the last 5 to 10 years of your life that maybe you can help another person similar to you walk through? And what skills can you use to do that? How can you use maybe your bookkeeping skills or your homemaking skills? And I think as you work through that process of asking those questions, you may not land on, oh, ding, 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 this is the career I need to do. But you may land in a zone where you're like, if I do anything kind of in this realm, I'm probably going to feel pretty fulfilled. And I can do it in whatever way works for my lifestyle right now. But those are some questions I think to ask and a process to take yourself through. If you're like, I have no clarity, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. I feel kind of purposeless. I'm feeling kind of like aimless. I'm just, you know, going through the motions every day, but I need to find something that's fulfilling. I think those are the things you have to ask, and you need to find that sweet spot where your skills and your passion, not just your interests, collide.
Yeah, that's super insightful. I do feel like a lot of times what women see and think that they should do is all those forward facing things. Yes. So like, you know, podcasters or being on video or even like in a church setting, you see the pastor, you see the singers, but you don't see the people behind the scenes. And oftentimes the behind the scenes work is full of passion too.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it can be very rewarding and can, it's an opportunity for you to use your skills to give back, but you don't necessarily have to be on the stage.
Well, 100%. I think, like you said, there's certain things that I feel like have been glamorized on social media or that people just kind of do willy nilly because it's like, oh, that sounds fun. I'm going to open an Etsy shop because that sounds fun. I mean, honestly, I can't like blame anybody for that. That's how my career started, ironically, and then it kind of evolved. But, you know, it's like, man, you have to kind of get creative and think about this. Like, I think about some of the girls who I've had work on my team. And one in particular comes to mind where she had a similar journey with that I did with multiple pregnancy losses and had kind of walked through some of the same health challenges. And she didn't necessarily feel like her calling was to get in front of thousands of people and share a message, but she wanted to work for someone who did. She wanted to get involved in that kind of message and that kind of movement. And she does really meaningful work for us. She writes a lot of my content. Like she, you know, she, so understanding like, you don't have to be the podcaster. You don't have to open an Etsy shop, but maybe you get involved with an organization who's doing something you care about, or maybe you work part-time as a VA to somebody who's doing something that you want to get involved in and have a hand in and feel like your work is connected to something bigger than yourself, even if you're not the voice, the pastor, the speaker, the this, the that. That's an option too. And that might fit your skill sets better, actually. You may not be the you know, most skilled communicator, but you might be a really great administrative help, you know, or a really great copywriter. So anyway, just understanding like your skills versus the pressure to jump in and start an Etsy shop or start trying to be an influencer or a podcaster. Like that's great if you really are skilled at those things and you want to do that. But I think bigger, think more creatively. I think there's a lot more opportunities than you think there may be.
If you struggle with chronic pain or muscle tension or even tightness from chronic stress, I have a new product for you from Bondcharge, and it quite possibly could change your life. Bondcharge is a holistic wellness brand with a huge range of evidence-based products to optimize your life in every way, from blue light glasses to EMF management to their new infrared sauna blanket. Bondcharge has all the high quality and effective products you are looking for. I use Bondcharge blue light blocking orange glasses every night, starting 2 hours before bed, and I wear the computer glasses when looking at screens. Both have made such a massive difference in my headaches and sleep. And just last month, I finally invested in a sauna blanket from Bondcharge. I've had my eye on it for a long time because it's the most affordable one out there that provides high quality far infrared light in a convenient and easy to use blanket setup. I am now 100% a sauna blanket super fan. I look forward to it every night. I typically lay it out on my bed, hit the button to heat it up, and sit inside of it at night while watching TV after the kids go down. Far infrared light works by heating the body up directly, which speeds up your metabolism and sweat rate. It also relaxes muscles and reduces muscle tension, and I've already noticed a big shift in my soreness and chronic pain. Ultimately, it's an incredible way to support your lymphatic system and detoxification, which, frankly, we all need to be more proactive about. You will feel relaxed, re-energized, and recover better. If you've been eyeing saunas, I couldn't recommend this more. And we have a deal which you will not find anywhere else. Go to bondcharge.com/wellfed and use the code WELLFED to save 20%. That's Bondcharge, BONCHARGE.com/wellfed. Use the code WELLFED to save 20%. That's $140 off your very own sauna blanket.
So let's talk about the one thing that everybody loves, and that's lack of control. We are not in control of our life, and that can be a good or bad thing depending on how you look at it. We have influence, right, but not control. So how do we renew our minds daily when it comes to the lack of control and understanding actually what we can influence? And really it comes down to managing that anxiety, right? So how do we manage the anxiety of lack of control?
Yeah, I think one of the most frustrating things is like when you're doing all the right things and things still go wrong. And I think, you know, are there things that we have control over in terms of our decisions and whatnot? Yes. Like, I think we can control the controllables, which is mostly ourselves, our reaction and the decisions we make. But we don't have a lot of control over the outcome, right? And I think that's the hardest thing to come to peace with, that we can do all the right things and we might still not get the outcome we want. Something might come along and blow up our plans or disrupt our timeline or whatever. And so I think coming to grips with that, at least for me, was one of the hardest things, because there was a long period of time there where if I just set a goal, I would do all the right things and I'd achieve the goal. And I was like, this is how it works, right? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly just things started going wrong out of nowhere. So I think, you know, kind of coming to peace with that, honestly, you know, it's growing pains. Like, it's, you almost have to just walk through it. But I also think if there's any lesson I can pass on, and this is just something to repeat to yourself, you can't control the outcome, but you can be available to what is meant for you. And I think if you can like lean into that truth, it allows you to be as in, because I think what can happen is when we feel like we don't, when we come to this realization of like, oh, I clearly don't have control. I know in my life, when I've tried to do all the right things and things still blew up in my face, there was a point where I was like, well, why even try? Like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen anyway. So why should I even put any intentionality into this? Like, I don't even care. Right. And I think that can happen when you've been so discouraged for so long. But I think through a refining process of just learning to navigate that, I kind of had to learn like, okay, I can be available and I can lean into making the best decisions I know how, but I have to release this idea that if I just do X, I'll get Y. Right. And I think there's a freedom that comes with that. It's not an easy place to come to. And it's really frustrating when it doesn't work out. But yeah. I think keep repeating to yourself, like, I can't control the outcomes, but I can make myself available and I can do the best I can with what I have. That at least allows you like a reminder and a renewal. Cause I think we may know subconsciously, I don't have control over the end result or the outcome of this because I can't control someone else's decision. I can't control, you know, if all the things work out. There's a lot of moving parts that we just don't have control of. So we may be aware of that, but when you're pushing so hard, it's so easy to lose sight of. And then it can just be such a catastrophe when you're like, I showed up, I did all the right things, and this is still blowing up in my face. How unfair, how not okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And it can create a lot of bitterness toward those who, especially when you see others who may not be trying to do all the right things and things just seem to work out flawlessly for them, you know?
Totally.
So there's this bitterness, there's resentment, there's this self-doubt, there's this anger, there's this lack of faith, there's disappointment, all these things come up. So that's why I think, like, it doesn't make it easier when things don't work out. But I think if you are mentally prepared for the reality of, like, I can be available and I can make the best decisions I can, but I don't get to control the outcome, constantly just reminding yourself of that helps you kind of, like, it cushions the blow if something doesn't go quite how you wanted. I wish there was, like, a better three-step solution to that too, where it's like, here's what you do. But the reality is, it's like, you have to renew your mind with that reality. And I think it allows you to, at least in my experience, in different ways, it's allowed me to intentionally still pursue the things that I really value with open hands, knowing, like, okay, this might not look quite how I thought. But I think coming to the place where I realized the story may go a little different than I envision it. The story might look completely different than I thought it was going to look, but that doesn't mean it can't still be a really good story. And reminding yourself of that, like, the story can be different and still just as good, even if it doesn't feel good in this chapter, there's a lot of freedom in that. And I think it helps you keep going with open hands and intentional steps forward when kind of you just want to fold, when you're like, whatever, you know? So just a reminder that, like, the story might not look how you thought. It might not unfold the way you wanted. It may not take or be as quick as you wanted. You know, it might take a lot longer, but that doesn't mean it can't be just as good.
Yeah. The waiting season, I feel like, is often filled with a lot of worry and fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the waiting season sometimes can really, like, drag us down. Mm-hmm. And if we don't manage it and we don't manage our mindset and we don't manage our viewpoint on it, mm-hmm. then that can actually dig us deeper into a hole. Yeah. So how can we find contentment in the seasons that are more challenging or overwhelming or filled with these, you know, missed or unmet expectations?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a whole book about this because, you know, I the way I tell my quick, like, overview, my 30-second story is, like, from 20, when I started my business, to 25, I felt like I had the world at my feet. I was, like, achieving one thing after the other, bought a house, got married, growing my business, like, setting goals, achieving them. I got used to that. And then at 25, I had back-to-back pregnancy losses over and over. And I was like, what the heck? I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm doing all the right things. Like, why is this becoming such a, like, catastrophe for me? Mm-hmm. And that was really a turning point for me, kind of in that 25 to 27 range, where I started to really ask some of these questions of, like, wait a sec, you know? And, you know, I think the waiting season, and I don't even know if it's always a waiting season. Sometimes it's just a season of, like, I had perfectly reasonable expectations. It looked like I was going to get married. It looked like I was going to get that house. It looked like it was going to work out. And then it blew up in my face. Right. I think what can happen is you get so discouraged when that happens, especially if it happens more than once, that kind of similar to what we were talking about before. It's almost like you just kind of want to be like, whatever, I don't even care anymore, you know? But I think what I was challenged to kind of navigate and work through is, how do you make sure that a waiting season or a season of unmet expectations doesn't become a wasted season? Because there's purpose in that place. And it's really hard to see because it just feels so pointless. It's like, this pain feels pointless. This disappointment feels pointless. This feels unfair. Like, there's a lot of pieces that come with that. And I think, you know, there's two different responses when life doesn't work out how we want, or things take longer than we want, or whatever. I think response number one is kind of a lackadaisical, like, whatever approach. And I think the other response that tends to happen is almost like a throwing yourself into so much busyness so you don't have to feel the things and deal with the things. And I've taken both approaches and I've learned from both. So what I think I had to realize is, like, there is this middle space though. And I think if you can lean into, okay, I don't want to hustle myself into the ground trying to distract and run from the thing that feels really hard, or that I'm, you know, trying to just fast forward through my life so I can get to where I want to go. But at the same time, I don't want to just totally, like, be unintentional with my life too. So the way I kind of thought about it, and I shared this with a friend, it was after my second miscarriage or something. She had walked through a similar thing a few years earlier. And I was like, did you ever just want to, like, busy yourself and just, like, distract yourself? And she was like, yes. But also, I think this is a boot camp season for you to learn how to be slow and how to be still and how to be more present and to be intentional about the things you're doing. And I was like, oh, you're probably right, whatever. But I enlisted myself in a boot camp season. And what I meant by that is I needed an aim, right? Because I kind of felt like I was in a battle a little bit. And so I just really was like, what are the things I really want to take care of that, you know, I thought maybe I'd be taking care of a child in the season, but I'm not. Or I thought I'd be married by now, but I'm not. Or, you know, fill in the blank for your life, whatever it is you might be waiting on or thinking you thought you might be doing by now. and really consider like, okay, well, how can I mother myself? Or how can I tend to my own growth? Like, what are the areas I need to invest in? And so I think that's how you avoid allowing a waiting season to become a wasted season. Instead of just overly busying yourself with all the things and all the obligations and burning yourself out, which is unhealthy, really identifying like, where are the areas I need to grow and what can I work on? And so I started seeing a therapist. I started working with functional doctors and focusing on my physical health, really poured into my marriage in ways that I, you know, had kind of neglected for a while. Focused on simplifying my lifestyle. Like, there was a handful of things that I was like, these are things and steps I'm going to take. And I even checked off some bucket list items. You know, if you find yourself just in this place of like, life doesn't look how I wanted. Intentional things you can do, whether that's learning a new skill, investing in your health, reconnecting or stewarding a relationship that's maybe not been really tended to very well, growing mentally or emotionally or physically in areas that maybe need to be focused on when it comes to your health, checking off some things you've always wanted to do. Maybe it's time to book that trip and like go and just like live in a different way, like see a different way of life. And I think allowing yourself to do a few of those things without necessarily piling your calendar full or completely clocking out of life, but choosing intentional things to do to really make a waiting season feel very fulfilled, really grows you. And it's going to prepare you. And that's why I say, like, when I say prepare for the thing you hope for, I don't mean like, you know, pick out your wedding dress if you've not even met your guy, or, you know, go prepare a nursery if you're not even like close to becoming a parent. But instead, prepare yourself. Like, the things you do, the bucket list things you wanted to do, the therapy you might invest in, the home projects you want to do, those things are going to grow you. They're going to make you a more interesting person. They're going to prepare you for that next thing you're hoping for, even if it takes a lot longer than you think.
100%. Yeah. Okay. So the last thing I want to talk about is boundaries, because nobody has any anymore because we have phones that are just to connect us all the time.
We're available at all times. Yes.
Yeah. So I like your idea of, you know, creating the boundary with social media, but how do boundaries or lack thereof play into our satisfaction and our happiness and even our ability to achieve goals?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times we think boundaries are things we set on other people, but actually I think they're things we set on ourselves so that we can love other people better and so that we can take care of ourselves well. And so for me, like, you know, a couple things I had to learn about boundaries. First, I had to set them on myself before I like expected them of other people. Cause I think sometimes we think of boundaries and it's like, don't call me after 8. And it's like, well, instead of looking at it that way, I think it's better to say, I shut my phone off at 8 o'clock. So, you know what I mean? Like, just, it's more of a personal, guardrail, if you will, on the things that you're willing to do and unwilling to do. And then I think the second piece of that is really intentionally clearly communicating those, because, and it's not saying, hey, don't call me at 8 o'clock. It's saying, hey, I'm going to try to get in this habit of shutting my phone off on Sundays. So if you need me, you know, just know that I'm going to be delayed in responding, and I'm going to try to shut my phone off by 8 p.m. Like, basic things like that. So I think communicating that those are things you're doing helps set an expectation, but it's something you're choosing to put on yourself, if that makes sense. Like, it's a boundary you're putting on your own availability, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So choosing to kind of approach it that way helps, because I think boundaries can feel really scary because they sound like we're shutting people out. They sound unkind. They come across kind of pretentious, maybe, you know. So setting, and I think also starting really simple. You know, I think there's a pressure, or like, just it's overwhelming to be like, well, how do I set all these boundaries? I don't know. It's like, well, maybe your boundary is just that you don't look at blue light after 8 p.m., you know, for your own hormones, you know? And it's like, that includes texting, but also watching television. Maybe you read before bed, like just picking one or two boundaries that you can set on a few things that tend to invade your life, and getting into a habit of those and getting used to them, allowing your people to get used to that being how you live your life. That really can be helpful in, you know, making it so that it's not this like thing where you come across like, suddenly I'm unavailable and I'm too good for you. Right. I think that's
it makes other people defensive.
Yeah. And I think it's just, it's important to start simple. Cause if you set 15 boundaries, cause you've heard they're important suddenly, you know, then the likelihood of you sticking with them is really low, and you don't even really necessarily need that many. But I think pick one or two things that you can kind of put a boundary on in terms of your screen time or your availability or whatever, and get used to doing those to the point where it just becomes second nature and it becomes easy. Then you can add more from there. But I'm a huge fan of just like simple morning routines, simple boundaries to start with, things you can actually see yourself sticking to and that are realistic. And then you can always build on it from there.
Yeah. Okay. So you're the best-selling author of 2 books. The most recent one is Embrace Your Almost, Find Clarity and Contentment in the In-Betweens, Not Quites and Unknowns. Tell me a little bit about that book. And then also, where are you nowadays? What are you working on, and where can people engage with you more and learn more from you?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking. Yeah, so that book really kind of was born out of a season of life not going how I thought and finding myself feeling like I was doing all the right things and things were still going wrong. And I realized, like, you know, so many of us want life tied up in a pretty little bow. And it was funny because even by the time I finished the manuscript, I still hadn't quite come to this like resolution on certain things. And I was still kind of in the middle. And I realized I wrote a book from the middle for the middle. That was kind of like for people who are like, you know, I've started on down a path and I've made some progress, but I'm not quite where I want to be. And I'm just, life doesn't look quite how I thought. I thought by now I'd be here. I thought by now I'd be there. And instead I'm not, you know? And so, that might be in small ways or big ways. You know, it can be as big as I thought by now I'd have a family and I've had a really hard time getting there. Or it might be as simple as I thought by now I'd have the 4-bedroom house and I'm still in an apartment. You know, like it's the whole spectrum, but that's kind of the book. It's meant to really serve anybody who finds themselves walking through a season of unmet expectations, of kind of disappointed dreams, if you will. So that's the heart behind it. And it really speaks to what we just talked about how do you turn this waiting season or this time where you're kind of not where you thought you'd be into a time where you can really grow, into a time where you can really invest, into a time that doesn't just be wasted or resented, but instead a time you can look back on 10 years from now and be like, I'm really proud of how I stewarded that time. So that's what that book's all about. And then to your second question, I'm on social media at Jordan Lee Julie on Instagram, TikTok, all the places, pretty active on Instagram, mostly Facebook as well. And working on kind of starting to draft a third book, still working through the concepts of that. So that's the next project, the next big project. But I do a lot of work in the clean beauty space. So kind of wellness and work, where wellness and work really collide for women. I really have a heart for helping women navigate that because I feel like I have been in extremes in both of those and really had to figure out what does that blend look like and how do we steward that well? So that's kind of the heart behind a lot of the work I do now going forward. But yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Jordan, for being here. And thank you for answering these, I think, more hard questions that a lot of people don't want to touch, you know, they, like you said, that you can't wrap it up in a pretty bow.
Yeah, there's some you know, like it's kind of more of a general process, not like a, here's your manual. Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate you taking the time to thoughtfully answering these. And I know that so many people are going to benefit from this. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It was so fun to chat.
Okay, so for more from Jordan, it's jordanleedooley.com. We will link to her book and everything in the show notes, Instagram, TikToks, all the things. For more from me, coconutsandkettlebells.com. Thanks for being here, guys. We will talk to you next week.